It's Tuesday, January 21st. Thank you for joining Wintrust Business Lunch with me, G. The sun is out over WGN Radio Studios, and today we've got a great show for you. You heard me tell John Williams that we have the fantastic, lovable Terry Savage in studio. She's going to be answering your calls and your text questions. So that's going to happen in the second half of the show. So be sure to text or call 312-981-7200. Of course, Terry is an expert on personal finance, the economy, and the market, so she can pretty much handle any question you have, except maybe not on pizza toppings, which was what John Williams was talking about. Okay, so let's start with our stock tip of the day. Joining us now is John Najarian. Hi, John.
Hello. Great to be back with you. Thank you.
Fantastic to have you. Let's just start with the stock tip of the day. What do you have for us?
Well, stock tip, it's one I'd play off of China and other things we might talk about, like a phase two deal, and that's Johnson Controls, JCI. We see a lot of activity in this name. They make interiors for and other parts for automobiles, as well as business jets and things like that. And a lot of upside speculative buying in that name today, JCI. So that was our pick of the day.
Well, fantastic. So you just mentioned it, the phase two of the deal. There seems to be a lot of folks that are convinced at the World Economic Forum that the China and U.S. Phase two deal is not going to happen as soon as everyone thought it was going to.
Well, and that could be. I'm wondering who those people are, because for the last several months, both sides have been signaling it's unlikely the phase two deal gets done before the election. And in fact, post-election is when we're anticipating that. But nonetheless, there are probably some who are not happy that it's not happening right now. I wish it would happen right now, but in fairness, I didn't expect it until after the election.
How closely are you watching the conversations that are happening right now with all of the elites gathering in the Swiss Alps?
Oh, I'm especially sort of chuckling every time I hear income inequality from people that arrived in private jets. I've spoken at Davos. I'm going to go back there and speak this week, in fact. And there's a lot of great people, and there's some pretty serious posers there, too, by the way. And like I say to my friends all the time, Let the social media decide who's exactly telling the truth and who's really walking the walk and talking the talk, because there's a lot of talking the talk there, but not so much walking the walk.
So based on what you just said, what can we expect to actually come out of this big meeting?
I don't think any of us are anticipating too much coming out of it this year. Last year, it was all about, you know, the recovery from just a disastrous December in U.S. and global markets. And this year, of course, we had a melt-up instead of a meltdown. So there's not as much focus on the markets, but I think probably 5G, which you and I have talked about on this show, is going to continue to resonate with people. We just finished up the J.P. Morgan Healthcare Conference. I'm not saying Davos is all about those two things, but certainly the World Health Organization and others that are looking for treatments and or cures for horrible diseases around the world, many of those folks that are working on those cures or treatments were at the J.P. Morgan Healthcare Conference last week. And many of those same people are in Davos this week talking about how they can afford, how people and governments can afford the breakthroughs that they're working on right now.
Oh, John, we've got so many more questions for you, but we've run out of time. So all I can do is look forward to you joining us again next week, talking with John Najarian, co-founder of Najarian Family Office and Market Rebellion. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. And please say hi to Terry for me, Terry Savage. I'm looking forward to hearing her on your show.
She's in studio. I think
I'm
she wants
studio.
To say hello.
I want to say hi to you. I was waving. Have a great time in
Davos. Oh, hey. Well, I'm waving as well, Terry.
Do
great
to
hear
go
your
to
voice.
Commercial,
we sure do.
John. talk about plant-based foods. 1 second. Beyond Meat. What is that stuff for real or not the food? It is obviously.
It's making big moves today, midday.
Making big moves. Yeah. What about Beyond Meat?
Making a huge move, I can give it to you in one word, Starbucks. They're talking about alternative meats as a breakfast sandwich and lunchtime sandwich, and that's what's driving that stock today.
Well, thank you so much, John. We got the great financial minds in studio today.
Wintrust Business Lunch, G here. Every week, we have the editors of Chicago Inno, which is all about Chicago startups, technology, and innovation. And they keep up with everything that's happening that you need to know about. These are actually cool products that affect everyday lives. And it's also a great investment opportunity, too, if you're looking for that as well. Joining me right now is Jim Dahlke, Senior Editor, and Catherine Davis, Associate Editor. Hi, Jim. Hi, Catherine.
Hey, G.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Okay, so I wanted to start with this story. We all use Grubhub, Seamless, Uber Eats. There's so many. Caviar. Restaurants are delivering more food than ever before. By 2022, listen to this, food delivery is set to become a $75.9 billion business. I spend way too much on takeout and delivery, and Terry Savage is going to yell at me for that later because that doesn't help my bottom line and my budget. But delivery companies are feeling the pressure to boost profits, including Grubhub, which is local. Their stock fell by more than 30% over the course of 2019. I just think this is very fascinating. And Jim, you've got some Grubhub news.
Yeah, that's right. So Grubhub and Let Us Entertain You are opening their third delivery-only restaurant here in Chicago. So this is a concept which is essentially a quote-unquote virtual kitchen. So a kitchen space designed just for delivery orders. So no in-dining experience here. This is just kind of for your app ordering.
So this is, you can't go there to pick up the food. You can't go there to eat there. This is just designed for delivery. And I feel as though people are experimenting with this because they're trying to figure out a way to make this cost effective, and they're losing money right now the way it's running.
We're at a really interesting point, I think, within the food delivery space. At one point, it's vastly growing. I mean, you just kind of ran down the numbers there. I mean, it's going to triple from 2011 to 2022 in terms of the amount of money spent. At the same time, the providers who are in this space are struggling a little bit. You're seeing companies like DoorDash and Postmates really rely on venture capital to make sure that they can help bring costs down for consumers and to get market share. And so the established player, like you mentioned, Chicago's based Grubhub, you know, they are actually the only profitable player in this space, but they have faced a lot of competition from these heavily VC-backed companies. So their struggles have really come from facing this competition and how they're able to kind of sustain their business with some fast-growing players who are relying on venture capital to continue to grow.
So this is the third iteration in terms of cuisine for this Let Us Entertain You and Grubhub collaboration. Is it working for them?
It sounds like it. So the first restaurant that they opened together was a Whole30 virtual restaurant that opened in August. And then in September, they opened a restaurant with Bon Appetit, so serving, you know, popular recipes from the website. And, you know, the third one, the most recent one, is going to be serving authentic Indian cuisine. So I think they're kind of trying to get in a ton of different verticals. There's a lot of variety of cuisines there. But it must be working because they keep opening them.
Of course, we've been talking about legal cannabis all year. There's a couple of new startups that's an offshoot of legal cannabis.
Yeah, so Philo, they are a young Chicago startup working...
And tell me the name again.
Philo.
Like Philo Dough?
Yeah.
But it's spelled...
F-Y-L-L-O.
Got it.
Yeah. They were actually on our Startups to Watch list this year. They raised $18 million right at the end of last year. And they made headlines last week because they acquired sort of a competitor in the space. They work in marketing tech for the marijuana space. So essentially, you know, if you're a cannabis company and you want to advertise, there are a lot of different state and federal regulations that you have to abide by. And Philo helps their clients navigate all of those different regulations. And so they purchased Canna Regs, which works in this the same space, for $10 million last week.
everyone is trying to get into the market, and this sounds like a really good resource if you're starting a business in legal cannabis.
Exactly, and it can be very expensive if you get dinged by sending an ad, you know, doing a Facebook ad, for example, that shows in Wisconsin instead of Illinois. And so, right, you're going to be fined some pretty steep penalties. And so what Philo is able to do is make sure that it's really what they're offering is, quote, compliance as a service. So they are making sure that all advertisers are compliant with state and federal laws. And so their acquisition that they just made on Friday was for $10 million. And, you know, for a startup that's less than a year old, a $10 million acquisition is pretty significant. And they were able to kind of double their headcount. They're now at like 75 folks here. So a really interesting kind of growing new startup here in Chicago.
It sounds like a lot of money to me.
Yeah.
Jim, let's move on to another newly legal activity in Illinois.
That's right. From marijuana to sports gambling, there is a new Chicago startup in town called BetSperts. And what they've kind of built is what sort of they're calling the LinkedIn for sports gambling. They've created a social network that kind of allows people to follow gamblers and see who's doing well and kind of follow the bona fide folks out there and track their gambling bets to make similar similar sports bets on their own.
In case you missed it, it's BetSperts, S-P-E-R-T-S, a kind of play on experts.
Exactly. So they allow you to follow experts kind of in real time. So for example, if you wanted to gamble on the Super Bowl and you wanted to see some people who've had success gambling on the Chiefs, for example, you can see a whole list and ranking of gambling experts and see how they've performed in the past betting on the Kansas City Chiefs and either, you know, mimic their bets or sort of fade their bet and bet against them.
Jim, do you know anything about sports betting?
I know a very little bit about sports betting. I definitely can't say that I'm a bet spurt myself, but I know that, you know, Illinois legalized this last year. It's yet to roll out, so we would expect to see sports gambling kind of go live here later in 2020. And so startups kind of operating in this space are going to have a pretty interesting opportunity.
I don't know if you know the answer to this or not, but I'm just throwing this out there. So these experts, are they okay with their secrets being known? Do they get some of a return from this or being part of the app?
So part of it too is, you know, clout, right? A little bit like, okay, hey, look at me at this ranking. Like, I'm one of the top experts in this space. People are relying on me for sports betting advice. So I think that there's a little bit of that element to it, too, the competitiveness of it. And what they're doing, too, with BetSperts is kind of making betting picks transparent, right? So they're allowing people to kind of put in their picks ahead of time and then track that stuff over time. And so you can really see, as the months and years progress, who are the bettors who are really making educated and picks that end up panning out.
Very fascinating, Jim. Catherine, tell me, are we already talking about scooters? It's not warm enough yet, and it kind of had mixed reviews last year, all the scooters around town, but you've got some news on scooters.
Yeah, so VeoRide, they're actually a Chicago-based scooter company. You know, a lot of these scooter companies, like Lime and some of the others, are based out of California, San Francisco, so it's really interesting to actually see one that's based here in Chicago. And last week they revealed that they're coming out with what they're calling the Veo Cosmo. It's similar to a moped. That's kind of what it looks like, but it's a seated electric vehicle, designed for those short shared use trips. It comes on two wheels, so it's sort of like a bike, but lower to the ground. But you know, the interesting thing about this is that, during the scooter pilot, you know, Veo Ride had to compete with some of these other more established scooter companies, and they did pretty well.
Okay, so Jim, are you going to be on one of these in the summer?
Well, there are a lot of tricky things that come with this, right? Because we've seen mopeds being rolled out into other cities, and the problem with shared bikes and shared scooters is parking. Where are we going to park these things?
Yeah, and you see them abandoned. I know I did last summer everywhere, and that was part of the issue. So thank you so much to Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis, a senior editor and associate editor at Chicago Inno, and your website?
ChicagoInno.com.
Thank you so much for being with us. A lot more coming up on WGN Radio. Go ahead and text and call now because Terry Savage is going to answer your questions, 312-981-7200. A Wintrust Business Lunch favorite, Terry Savage, an expert on personal finance, the economy, and the markets. Her website is terrysavage.com, and she also has columns that are syndicated by the Tribune Content Agency. And Terry, I wanted, before we forget, let's talk about this event that you're going to be a part of.
Right, tomorrow. And there are a few, the only reason I'm bringing this up is there are a few individual tickets left. This will be, believe it or not, my 40th year emceeing the Executives Club of Chicago annual economic forecast luncheon. We have two regulars that have been on our panel for years, Diane Swonk, famed economist, you see her on CNN. She's with Grant Thornton, and Dr. Bob, who is Dr. Bob Froelich, who is not only hysterical and just so much fun to listen to, but he has been so outrageously correct about this bull market for the last few years. And his target for this past year, 2019, was 28,000. I think it was 858. And, you know, he emailed me right at the end of the year when we got up to that level. And he said, I told you so. Last year, we polled the audience. A third of the audience last year thought the market would be below at year end from January to December, would be below 24,000. So you know how wrong everybody was. So he's great. But this year, the actual star, every year we bring in what I call the wild card. Jeffrey Gundlach, who is CEO of Double Line Capital Management, he is all over CNBC all the time, and he's adding his forecast. So it's about 1,700 people. I called just before I came on. They said, we have some single seats available. Corporations take tables. And it's 1,700 people. It's just a huge thing. It's at the Hyatt. And if you go to executivesclub.org, executives, plural, executivesclub.org. It's tomorrow at noon at the Hyatt. I don't even have no idea what the seats cost, but believe me, it's going to be worth it.
It's high praise if you get invited back 40 years consecutively.
40 years,
that's incredible.
I'm holding my breath till it's over tomorrow.
Before we answer listeners' questions, wanted to ask you if you wanted to add anything on to your friend and colleague, John Najarian's assessment.
Oh, you know, I love Dr. J. In fact, he was nice enough to write a blurb, a comment on the cover of my new book, The Savage Truth on Money, the brand new edition that came out last month. So you know what I want to say? John is so smart and he's so good, but John is a trader.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've had my chances. I was a founding member and the first woman trader on the CBOE, I mean, years and years ago. And I am not a trader. It's very important to recognize what you're good at. I've turned out to be a very good long-term investor because I've always believed in the future and not gotten crazy and never got, you know, caught up in the manias, maybe got out a little too early from some positions. But basically, I'm a long-term investor. Dr. J is a trader and an excellent one. So you have to know who you are when you listen to these commentaries because you have to pay attention if you're trading.
That's a very good point, Terry. Let's take our first call. This is Marge, and she has a question about her 401k. Hi, Marge. What's your question for Terry?
Hi, Terry. My question is, with all these no-fee investment firms out there that offer zero fees to manage your 401k, do you recommend managing it yourself or letting them handle it for a percentage of your portfolio?
Whoa, let's back up. First of all, you don't run the company. Okay. You work for a company and they offer a 401k.
Well, I'm already retired and my 401k is in an investment firm.
Okay, so this is important. Typically, when you retire, the smart move is to roll over your 401k into an IRA rollover. I'm going to give you some of the caveats about that. But the reason you do that is 401k investment choices are set up for younger people who have a longer time horizon and they can afford to be aggressively in growth funds. And that's mostly what's in 401k plans so you can make your money work for retirement. Now, once you retire, you'd probably like a more conservative choice of funds. And you can do that by doing an automatic rollover. You don't touch the money. You don't take a check. You go to Fidelity or Vanguard or Schwab and have them roll over your 401k. Then you get another thing to do. You have a whole choice of decisions. Now, the reason I stress Fidelity, Vanguard, or Schwab is because they have funds in them that have zero cost. You can buy a Standard & Poor index fund. You can buy an equity income fund, a balance fund, and be a little less aggressive. But when you roll over your 401k into an IRA, you open yourself up to calls from all kinds of people that want to sell you all kinds of, I can't say that word on the air, but all kinds of junk that has heavy fees or has ties your money up, annuities and so forth. So I would suggest you do a rollover. Go to any one of those. They will give you basic advice for free on asset allocation. And I don't know how old you are, but when you turn 72 now, if you haven't reached 70 and a half already, they'll also tell you how much you're required to withdraw every year.
Marge, how many years have you been retired?
I retired a year ago.
Okay, so relatively new. Happy retirement to you.
Yeah. Have you started taking
no.
Social Security yet?
I did.
How old are you?
I am 69.
Oh, good for you. You did all the right things. Number one, you worked the extra years. That's going to mean so much. Number two, you waited to full retirement age. Congratulations, you're doing it right. And this idea of rolling over your 401k, being a little more conservative now at this point, is a great one.
Well, thanks Marge, for your call.
Thank you.
Speaking of Social Security, we were just talking about this, and you're referring to the delayed retirement credits and potentially boosting the size of your check monthly.
Yeah, you do. Rule one, never take Social Security before full retirement age. Just don't. It's penalizing yourself 8% a year. In the early years, you're going to be penalized if you have other earnings. You just do not want to take it before your full retirement age. If you can, you'd like to wait until you're 70, at which point you must start taking it, but you'll get a bigger check. It's not just the bigger check, and let's not talk about betting against yourself. It's different, of course, if you have a terminal illness or something like that. But getting that bigger check is a bigger base. In case there's inflation, which there will be down in the future, you'll have a bigger base on which to get the cost of living adjustment.
So, Terry, you were just talking about 401k and being a little bit more conservative with your investments, depending on how old you are and how close you are to retirement. This is a text question. This is from the 847. Is it too safe to have all my money in the Fidelity Balanced Fund? Retired and 62-year-old single female, no dependents, more liquid savings and cash plus adequate monthly income.
No, that's the kind of thing you want to do when you're retired. Now, you're at 62, the odds are you're going to live maybe 25 years. And at only 3% inflation, your money spending power is cut in half in 25 years. So you do want to have some growth. A balanced fund is a fine place to do it. You're in a low-cost place. And as long as you have other cash on the sidelines, you don't have to start taking withdrawals for 10 years. So let the money grow.
One more quick 401k question. How do you find a lost 401k or profit-sharing account? Social Security Administration told me I had an old balance at a previous employer's.
I've never heard that before, but did you contact Social Security and will they let you know who the previous employer was? Then they have a fiduciary who manages the plan. I'm not talking about the investments in the plan, but the paperwork. So you'll need to call the company and find out who that is and start tracking it down. It's got your Social Security number on it. It's how they know. So by all means, track it down.
A lot more coming up with Terry Savage. We've got a lot of phone calls and a lot of questions. A lot more coming up right here on WGN Radio. G here with the Wintrust Business Lunch, and Terry Savage is in studio with us answering your questions. Terry's an expert on personal finance, the economy, and the markets. Go to terrysavage.com. Let's start with another listener call. Hi, Marianne. Are you there?
Hi, I'm here, yes.
Fantastic. What's your question for Terry?
Okay, I'm curious about if it is worth hiring a lawyer to help figure out student loans. My daughter has a lot of student loans. She is not behind in any of the payments. She's done deferments and all that. But I've seen ads for lawyers who can help with this. Is it worth the money?
I don't think so. I haven't seen those ads, but boy, that sounds interesting. Sounds like a great way for a lawyer to make some money. Let's back up. Is your daughter employed? Does she have a job and an income?
Yes. Okay. She is employed, has an income.
Does she have federal student loans, private loans, and do you have any parental student loans? Plus
no parental, but she has private and federal.
Okay. Private loans, those private lenders have very little interest in reducing your monthly payments or reducing your interest rate because they know they're going to get you. Federal student loans, you realize she's obviously gone through some deferments and so forth. Now she can just probably barely afford to pay her monthly student loan bill and live, right? Is that the situation so many young people are in?
Correct. She's living with us, so she has.
Okay. Yep. Let me send you to SoFi, SOFI.com. There are a number of companies. You can actually search them out at credible.com. But I'd start at SoFi. If your daughter is employed, has an income, they can refinance those loans at a lower rate. Now, if you refinance the federal loans, then you lose some of the benefits of deferment and so forth. So at least start by refinancing the private student loans. You'll probably get a much lower rate if she's got good credit and she's been on time and she's got a good income. I cannot imagine paying a lawyer to do that for you when there are so many companies set up online that do just that because kids are buried in debt. So SOFI, SOFI, it stands for Social Finance, SOFI.com or Credible.com, where you can find a number of companies that refinance student loan. Be careful about refinancing the federal loans, though. Mm-hmm. And again, anything you can do to help her to pay down those loans. It's not the loan. It's the burden of the interest. And today, when you can get 1% in the bank, and she's probably paying 7-8% or maybe even more on those loans, it's a lose-lose proposition. So anything you can do to help her would be great.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for your call. Terry, of course, student loan debt is now over $1.6 trillion. That is a crazy...
I've been ranting about this forever. I wish Congress would do... You know, I'm looking today. There's news in the bond market. Treasury 10-year treasuries are yielding under 1.8%. So it means the government can borrow for less than 1.8%, but the rates on student loans, new ones, are well over 4-5%, and the old ones carry their fixed rate loans forever, so people who borrowed several years ago are paying 8, 9, and 10%. My vote is don't forgive the loans. Think about all the people that paid them off. That would be an insult. But adjust the loans every 6 months or every quarter to the rate of 10-year treasuries. Why should the government pay less to borrow than the students they're trying to encourage?
Terry, can we do a quick text question?
Sure. Quick.
This is from the 708. I'm going to be 80 next month, living with family. Have a little over $200,000 in savings. Have done CDs in the past and specials at the bank. Just concerned about my future. I'm doing okay, but I have a chronic lung disease.
Okay, well, you are doing okay. And thank, you know, first of all, thank God for your family that wants to help you. So at some point, you'll be able to help them. Did you see this news story, G, about someone bought a couch at a thrift shop and the ottoman opened, they opened up the ottoman, it was lumpy and it was $160,000 in cash stuffed into it?
That would be my dream come
true. Okay, so a couple of things. First of all, you need to make sure at age 80 and in this situation that you have an up-to-date will. Probably that's a simple will is all you'll need. Number two, your family must love you very much to have you there, but you also want to make sure that your accounts at the bank, that someone knows where they are, not to rip you off. I'm always hesitant about saying tell everybody everything, but you need to make sure that either you've designated a payable on death or a beneficiary or that you have a will. You also need a healthcare power of attorney in case something happens to you. And just keep doing what you're doing. I wish you a long life. And I'm glad you have some savings to fall back on.
So he's doing pretty good.
Yeah, we should. Everybody out in our audience would be thrilled to be 80 and have people who love you, care for you, live with them, and have some cash.
Let's go to caller Kate. Hi, Kate. What's your question
there
for Terry?
I have three children, and they just inherited $5,000 cash from a family member, and they don't have bank accounts yet, so we're trying to figure out where to put it. The kids are 16, 14, and 10.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'll give you two quick suggestions. You could open up a 529 college savings account and start with that amount of money for them, and you only need to open one because that account can be used by any member of the family. If that's not rewarding, though, enough for them and they want to see their money grow, you could go to a place called stockpile.com. Now, I'm not guaranteeing the money will make money and they may make some bad choices, but if you'd like to expose them to investing in the stock market, the minimum transaction is $5, the 99 cents a transaction. They could pick stocks that they know and like, whether they're into Disney Plus or Apple or whatever. Forget how high the market is. You know, they may make money or lose money, but you can expose them to stocks at stockpile.com. And I don't recommend putting it in a bank custodial account. That money weighs against them in the college financial aid formula if you do need federal financial aid.
Well, we hope that helps. Thanks for calling, Kate.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is a text for a clarification. This is from the 773. I'm 72, still working full-time and collecting my Social Security. What was Terry talking about when she said it's mandatory to take money out of my 401k? I have never done that because I'm working and thought I should leave it alone until I retire.
No, and I'm sure that the people who manage your 401k noted, they know your birthday. If you're 72 now, you should have started taking a required minimum withdrawal at the year after you turned age 70 and a half. You might slide under because there's a 50% penalty if you don't take those RMDs. So contact your 401k, the people that do the bookwork for it, and talk to them immediately.
This is a text question.
That's, by the way, you can still keep contributing, but because you're working.
Got it.
But you have to take the RMD.
This is from the 312. I just came into $250,000. What should I do with that?
Let's have lunch for dinner. You know, this is a wild question. I'm going to ask it of the panelists tomorrow at the Executives Club Economic Forecast Luncheon. What would you do if I gave you $100,000 today, assuming your debt is paid down, your mortgage is very low rate, and you don't want to give it up, and you don't have any other financial burdens? It depends, of course, for you, as I answer you, your age and stage in life and your situation. Pay down debt, open a retirement account if you're still working, consider how much you'd be willing to lose of that money before you start going wildly speculating in the stock market. There's a place you can find good financial advice from people who are not trying to rip you off. These are certified financial planners who are fiduciaries, put your interests first. In Chicago, I know a bunch of them who have been vetted and allowed to be on this site. It's called WealthRamp.com, WealthRamp.com. And there you can find CFPs. Have a meeting with them and see how this changes your life in many ways. It's really a blessing to have that money suddenly, so don't blow it.
A last quick question from Rachel on the line. Hi, Rachel. Your question's about a 401k from a previous employer. Go ahead and ask Terry.
Hi, Terry. So I was involved in an employment reduction, and that was about a year and a half ago, and I kind of just left my 401 at my employer.
Are you working now, Rachel?
I'm working now, but unfortunately, I never can see, they don't offer any kind of benefit.
Okay, let's stop. Number one, you can leave the account there, or you can do an IRA rollover. Call Fidelity, Vanguard, or Schwab, and they'll handle it directly. You never touch a check. Second of all, you need to set up your own IRA for the money you're earning now and set up a separate account from your IRA rollover. Make it a Roth IRA. You won't get a deduction, and have them take money, a couple hundred dollars out of your checking account every month, so you will have your own retirement. Nothing's more important than doing that now, making your money work for you.
Thank you, Rachel, for your call. And Terry Savage, thank you so much. Of course, we've got a text question about where can we find all of these resources. You can find them on terrysavage.com.
And you can post questions. I stay up late at night answering the ones that people send in that didn't get
answered. Well, there you go. Thank you so much for being in studio today, Terry. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.